listening to New Layer, a design podcast with Tanner Christensen and Jasmine Friedel.
A crucial part of any design career is the critique.
The critique. I feel like all these topics are like, you know, big ones. Dun, dun, dun. The critique. How do you get feedback?
Critique is by itself is an interesting word. I've talked to designers who hate the word critique.
Because of criticism.
Exactly.
And because it usually feels like criticism.
It can, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's understandable why. Like, to do our best work, we need to get feedback, right? We need other people's perspective.
You need, well, yeah, you need to believe that.
But as just human beings, we kind of suck at giving feedback.
Giving feedback? Or taking feedback. I think we suck at both.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So this will be a fun topic.
Let's do it.
Okay. So let's start just by talking about the best critique you've ever been in. What did it look like? How did it feel? Why was it good?
That's a good question. Putting on my thinking face. I think we've got on my teams, we've gotten our critiques to a really great structure where they all feel pretty good. But I think the ones that stand out to me are when somebody comes out feeling sort of joyful, even when they've realized they have to head in another direction. So there's some sort of like an excitement or enthusiasm because something has been uncovered for them or unblocked for them. And I don't have a specific one in mind. I think probably because my work is not the work that's being critiqued anymore in the same way. What about you?
Yeah, for me, I want to say that I can vividly remember this experience. I was a relatively new designer. I think I'd only been on the team for maybe a month or two. And the critique involved two teams, not just my own. So I think there was like 20 people in the room, which I don't think is ideal, but in this case it worked out really well. And kind of like what you touched on, it was a great critique because those presenting engaged the audience in a way that was kind of like, come along on this journey with me. Let's figure this out together.
Right.
And the audience kind of reciprocated that, where they were like, we're not here to evaluate your work necessarily. We're here to help you see the things that you need to see to make sure this work is impactful.
Right.
Right.
So how about the flip side? What about can you remember the worst critique you've ever been in?
I can, absolutely.
Tell me.
The worst critique ever. Much smaller team. I think there was only four or five of us on the team. I was, again, new. So it was kind of like enlightening to me. And our director of design was in the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And he or she was the only one talking and giving feedback.
Right.
And I remember there was one part where a designer who I think it was actually an intern on the team, he was showing some work and immediately this director chimed in by saying, oh, you have like this gradient on this part of the design. We don't do that here. And the intern kind of just like went, oh, okay, I'll make a note of that. Mm-hmm. So he wrote it down his notebook. And that was the end of it. And I remember walking out of that critique thinking like, none of us learned anything except for that this director is opinionated and that apparently we don't use gradients in our designs.
What not to do list that's secret somewhere.
Yeah. And not only that, but like just no one learned anything. We have no idea why we don't use gradients, whether or not a gradient was good in this instance, and like how to engage each other as a team. We didn't learn that either. So what about you? What was your worst experience or what has been?
I can think of two. I can think of one specific and one more theme. When I was in grad school, when we did those critiques where I used to, you know, post your work up on the wall and then we'd all like as a group go around together and give feedback. And I remember losing it and breaking down into tears after my critique was done just because the critique was so ruthless. And for me, I was working full time and doing grad school full time. So I hadn't had the time to get to the quality that other people had. And so reasonably, I should have like been able to take that feedback, but just the way in which it was delivered was so harsh. And I think this is not an uncommon theme in school where you're just practicing to learn what isn't good in order to learn what is good. So I think I bawled for days on that one. And then the other one I can think of is one of the teams I had before I was in leadership was just this whole, the loud voice thing, you know, where someone tends to have a loud voice in the room and they just talk so much that you have to interrupt and to get a word in edgewise, even if you're the presenter, but also if you're a critique giver. I just remember so many, and one woman who was on the team who just, you know, always had to be the first to speak. and always, you know, talked for a really long time to make sure everyone really, really understood what she was saying. And I think when I think of that, like, that's just not a great situation to be in. But also, I think it made me be a poor feedback giver, because what I learned then was, in order to, you know, get a word in edgewise, I would have to interrupt or be louder than that person in the room. And so I think I ended up like getting some bad habits from bad critique environments. And those critique environments could have just been controlled by how they were facilitated and what we valued, and, you know, having clear alignment on what we valued in critique.
Yeah. Wow. I feel like we've already started to kind of tease in some really great subjects here on what makes a critique valuable and invaluable, and how to do it effectively. Right. Sure. Let's start by talking about the format of critique. So there's many different formats, and depending on whether you're getting feedback from another designer one-on-one, or an engineer one-on-one, or someone else, or you're part of a team, or you're doing something as formal and kind of like high level as an executive review, right? There's different formats these things can take. I know you and your teams have done many different formats. I've been part of a few, one or two, but I don't know. Do you want to start off by talking about some of the formats of critique that you've seen and observed?
Yeah, I think, well, we've tried a lot of things on the teams that I've worked on and the teams that I've led over the years. And I think we've come on a pretty good one. I will just kind of give a plug for Ron Israeri's book, The Discussing Design, because that really has pretty much everything you need to know.
Plus one. That is a remarkable book, Discussing Design. Highly recommend it.
So when I think of the things that have made good critique, I think of, you know, hey, what do we value? And I think the purpose of critique or any kind of feedback is to help unblock the person, to move them forward, to deliver quality results that solve the problem at hand. And so when you look at that, it actually changes the tone of critique from being about a bunch of people's opinions on your work to collectively supporting the person presenting work to be able to get to that end result. And so seeing a lot of bad critiques, what we do in our critiques, and again, sort of pull this from many different environments along the way, but what we do is we have a clear format that everybody knows ahead of time, you know, hey, you're going to give the problem you're trying to solve, you're going to give brief context. The problem you're going to try to solve is so that people can evaluate your work against that problem and then give feedback based on that. The context is to get any questions out of the way so that we don't spend a lot of time on saying like, hey, what were you doing? Why are you doing this again? And I think if you've been in a number of critiques, you've probably been in one where somebody's like, I don't even think we should be doing this in the first place. And something that I've noticed over time is just like, a group of designers might not actually be the right people to be making that decision. And so we actually need to be explicit about who is the decision maker. And for a lot of things, it's like, oh, well, you know, the product team has already discussed what you as a designer who's a participant, an audience member in the critique, is already seeing for the first time. And we've already dug into that. So rather than spending the time like getting you up to speed and convincing you that this is what we should be doing, we actually should have the autonomy to say like, hey, that's off the table for right now, but here's what we want to focus in on. So the problem we're solving, the context, what the person's going to be looking for in the critique, like what is the ask, and then, you know, the presentation of the work. Then I ask for clarifying questions, and then we give feedback. In this whole thing, we also set up roles. We set up a facilitator, someone to make sure that we're staying on track for what the person's asking, that we're staying on time, because critiques can take hours if you let them. They can take 20 minutes and be efficient if you don't. Audience members, and I have started assigning a note taker too, so that the presenter can be like fully focused. In addition to that, we do, in my critiques, we do, when we have any, you know, over three or four people, we do round robin. And what that means is, you know, when people are writing their feedback as the presentation is happening, they're writing it down on stickies. And what that allows them to do is when it comes time to give feedback, they actually have to think through, you know, hey, we're only giving one piece of feedback at a time. And then, you know, we're going to go around the room. And so you have to prioritize the feedback. And that allows people to, rather than saying like, I have five things to say, they're going to pick the most important one and deprioritize the things that aren't as important. And what that does is it helps us like really actually critically think through the most important feedback to give. And it equalizes the voices in the room, which I think is really important. So that's like a bunch of stuff that we're doing right now that have sort of been collected and iterated over time over the past three teams that I've led.
Those are the two formats of critique that I am also familiar with. So yeah. I don't really have anything to add to necessarily. But there's a lot there to unpack. So I think we can just dive in there. First and foremost, I think no matter what format your critique's coming in, the underlining thing when presenting work or showing work or when you're an audience member and it's not clear to you is communicating what is this design trying to accomplish?
Right.
What is the objective? Another kind of secondary question you can add onto that is like, how are you going to measure that success, right? Mm-hmm. And with those two things, any critique can become immensely valuable. For the presenter, if someone starts going on a tangent or they're presenting feedback that doesn't really align with your objective, you can kind of interject and be like, I hear you, that's good, that's valuable, but like right now we need to solve this other thing.
And that's actually hard as a presenter to do. That's one of the reasons that I like to leverage a facilitator, because when you are a presenter, you were supposed to be the recipient. And we all know that we're supposed to take all the feedback and say, thank you. That's really helpful feedback. And so it's really hard to actually bridge that and say, oh, wait, that's not what we're talking about. So I try and leave that on the facilitator to say, hey, you know, Tanner was presenting about this. That's actually outside of the scope. Why don't you guys sync up afterwards? And that way we can stay focused, you know, for this time, this short time that we have.
That's actually exactly where I was going next.
Stealing your thunder.
I'm trying to keep in mind here as we talk about this that when we say critique, it can take many different forms. Again, sometimes it's one-on-one with people, in which case you can't have a moderator, and then other instances with a team. Let's go right to that, because I do think that's... So again, you've established like objective and you've shared that.
I'm speaking very specifically about like the formal critique. And I think we should get into like, hey, what happens when you don't have a design team and there's not that like institutional structure. I'm also not talking about design reviews or product reviews or anything like that, because I think there's a piece of those that end up being more directional, more approval, where critique is really this discussion about a really targeted discussion on design.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, that sounds okay. Great. Okay, so when it comes to that structured critique process, there are specific roles. And if there are not, then it's just chaos. So I agree with what you just said, and that's how I like to facilitate, facilitate critique as well, is set it up where everyone has their distinct roles and they know. A question for you is, when your team goes into critique, are those roles already established, or is it kind of a thing like you're all in the room and now we can start figuring out who takes notes and who's going to facilitate?
Do you want to know like ideally or what really happens?
I want to know what really happens.
It happens at sort of ad hoc. I think the better critiques are ones when, you know, the formal version of critique are when you step away and people say, hey, I have this to present and here's the problem, rather than coming in and saying, oh, you know, I guess there's a critique slot open and I should maybe show something. So I'm just going to walk you through some work. And then they say, well, I don't really have anything that I'm looking for feedback on. So just tell me if I'm missing anything, or tell me like, you know, any feedback you have is valuable feedback. And I think those are very rarely useful because they don't actually propel the work forward. So I have a sign up sheet where it's like, you know, up to three people can go in an hour time frame, 20 minutes each. We do these twice a week, and I have a facilitator and a note taker that I would like people to sign up for. My team's really small right now and we're rebuilding, so there aren't a lot of people in that group. So I've been playing the role of the facilitator, and I actually think that's really important for me to model how that works. I don't think it's important, like your experience, for me to talk first. I think it's actually my role is to talk last.
So sorry to clarify.
Yeah.
That's talking not as a facilitator, but as like a leader on the
team.
As
giving feedback. Like unless there's something where I say, hey, this is directionally off, and I, you know, either use my experience or, you know, knowledge of the problem that we're solving to say, hey, we actually, this isn't worth having a discussion about because we need to go this way, or this isn't at a place where we should be having this discussion. So there's some like directorial things that I will implement, but in general, like my feedback is not more valuable than the teammates' feedback. So in that sense where I sort of like, yeah, I'll facilitate, but as I'm a participant, just like a regular audience member, I have someone else go first and I just sort of like jump into the circle.
Right. So just to recap again, we've got the presenter, obviously, and mm-hmm. in an ideal world, they set up in advance that they take a slot.
And actually, this is really cool. This is something that when I came into Intercom, I noticed that, you know, there were a couple of folks that were having a hard time presenting. It was kind of all over the place. We'd pull up some Google Docs to give context and it would just take a lot of time. And so I challenged two of my former teammates to be able to think in advance and come in with like a mini presentation. And it was night and day how much better they got at presenting their work, because all it took was like 5 minutes to think about what I'm presenting. Hey, what do I actually want feedback on? And the asks got really more clear from being like, oh, you know, anything you have is valuable, or like, just let me know if I'm missing anything, to like, hey, no, I've actually like, I'm pursuing this problem. You know, maybe it's a choice between direction A or direction B, or maybe it's like, hey, I'm struggling with this pattern and I need feedback on that. But them taking 5 to 15 minutes beforehand to put something in a quick deck and presenting it that way actually controlled the audience, as well as being more clear on what their ask was for, or what their problem was they were solving was.
As we talk about these roles, I think it's helpful to talk just kind of, as you alluded to a little bit, the responsibilities of each of these roles. So as a presenter, your job's not just to like show work and then admire the feedback you get, right?
Or like hope for like, you know, yay, you did so great. Like, I think there's still some folks who come in and they're a little bit miffed when they have to take feedback, because they're like, no, I'm just going to do this anyways, because like, it was pretty great when it came in. Like, you have to come in with an open mindset.
Yeah, that's really the role, right? So as a presenter, it's to come in and set the stage so not even you as a person, but the work can get evaluated as it needs to be. So again, talking about the objective, talking about how it's going to be measured, and really honing in, but get as specific as you can on the type of feedback you need. Mm-hmm. What are you blocked by? What are your questions about? What do you think you might not be seeing? Are there other outside perspectives that might lend themselves to a more optimal solution, or increasing the quality of the work, for example?
Yeah, the one I don't love there is like, what are the things I'm not seeing? Because I think that's a crutch. I think that's a crutch for people not actually doing the work of trying to figure that out. So if that's the primary ask, like, what am I missing? I'm like, well, you should like thoroughly evaluate and know and have done the exploration up until this point.
Totally.
If it's a complimentary question to other things, then that seems totally fine.
I mean, part of critique actually is just that. It's getting feedback on things you might not be seeing, right? Like, so I completely agree. No one should go into critique and be like, do my job for me, help me figure out what I need to do. That's not the role of the critique.
That's interesting though, because that brings up another point. Like, I have in the past seen folks coming in and they're like, I just need help on this problem. And for me, I'm like, you want to brainstorm. That's not critique.
That's a separate meeting.
Those are different things. And I don't mind, and this is sort of up to whatever manager, whoever's leading the critique, I don't actually mind using that time if it's useful. But if it's a brainstorm, let's call it a brainstorm. Let's not try and fit that into a critique format. So we've had folks who say, you know, I'm stuck. And I say, okay, cool. Like, let's schedule a jam session for later in the week. That's fine. Or let's do that right now. But you have to come prepared for that. And so just sort of being honest about, is this a critique? Is this something where I'm going to get feedback? Is this something where I'm going to get unblocked? Like, I think that's really useful to just like be honest about it.
Exactly. And again, the reason for that is because brainstorms and ideation sessions have a very different structure than a feedback critique session.
Yeah.
And if you're not set up for that, if you kind of surprise people who are anticipating looking at work and kind of evaluating it that way, and then saying, nope, we're going to kind of like try to solve this problem.
Right.
Well,
another one that fits in there too is like show and tell. When people want to come and just do a little show and tell, that's cool. Like, we can do that. But then there is no ask for feedback. And if we actually wait, I mean, it's kind of a waste of time if we're going to give feedback to somebody who just wants to show progress. And that's okay. But like, then just say, I'm showing progress.
Yeah, exactly. So the other role that you mentioned was the facilitator, or what I like to call a moderator. Mm-hmm. And their responsibility, again, you touched on this a little bit, is primarily to ensure that the person presenting has done their due diligence and shared their objective and things, and that the audience is there to help give them insights or perspective, or ask questions and just help work towards that objective, right?
Sure.
And then there's the note taker.
Okay.
I'm very curious to hear a little bit more about how...
Do you not use a note taker?
We do use a note taker every single time. I've heard mixed kind of reactions to the way that I'm used to doing it on my team, which is one person is always assigned the role of note taker. We don't rotate responsibilities. It's always, in my case, our manager, because we're a small team. He kind of, like you, wants to take a little bit of a step away from providing explicit direction or feedback.
Right.
And so he's great at taking notes, which I think is important.
Well, I mean, usually a manager is generally more experienced in design, and so they have that power of synthesis where they can actually like pull out the things that are really important, the things that are duplicative. I've had in the past one person do it. When I was at Udacity, I had our amazing design program manager, Caitlin, do it. And what she would do is just sort of like write down verbatim notes, and that allowed the person to you know, go back and just sort of like revisit the conversation. I tend to rotate it. And I think it's important if you're not having someone who has a special role, like a manager or design program manager, doing that, because usually it just tends to fall on women, and women just tend to, you know, say yes to the administrative tasks. And I want to equalize that load across the team. So we just have volunteers. And if I notice that someone hasn't taken notes in a while, I ask them to. But I think it's what it does. The importance of this role is really about allowing the presenter to step back and be engaged in the conversation rather than, you know, sort of cherry picking the things that resonate with or just the things that they've heard in this time. So it's a nice piece of the process to just have that documentation.
Yeah. And another way that people can do this, either if it's a small group or people aren't really comfortable taking notes or whatever reason, is what's known as round robin.
Right. That's what we do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So instead of having a note taker, the person presents, and then everyone just kind of goes heads down, quiet for, I don't know, 5 minutes or so, and writes their own notes that then they can hand deliver to the presenter.
Right. The only problem I have with that is, like, I've been the receiver of handfuls of sticky notes, and like, unless people write them really, really well, this is all like, it's actually facilitation where you're like, okay, write down these notes, write them in a way that the person can interpret them later, or at least put your name on them so that that person can go back and ask you. Like,
yes.
There's all these little things where, you know, a lot of this doesn't matter. Does it matter if you write your notes while the person's presenting? Does it matter if you write them after? It really doesn't. But, you know, you figure out what's useful for you. But the facilitation of it tends to be most useful. Even if you decide, like, hey, it's not a present and give feedback, maybe you're going to ask questions along the way. The downside of that is it can really derail a conversation, and you can spend, you know, the first 20 minutes that you were supposed to be done in 20 minutes answering contextual questions. But if you have a good facilitator, they can say, you know, I think we're going to have to cut this one short because we need to move on and make sure we get to the end of this presentation.
Yeah. This brings up an interesting, not necessarily format change, but a small thing that I've seen added to a few critiques, and I've read about this. I haven't personally experienced it hands-on myself, but it's changing the feedback mechanism in the critique to be questions only. So
I like the Socratic kind of a thing, or?
Yeah. So Okay. What this means is essentially all the roles are the same. You've got a presenter, a note taker, and a facilitator or moderator. And when it comes time to kind of provide that feedback, whether it's in the middle of the presentation or at the end of it, the only thing you're allowed to do is ask questions. You know, why did you decide on this? How did you do this? What else have you explored here? Have you considered this other variable, right?
Yeah, and I feel like I'm having reactions. Let me think through my reactions. There's something there where that kind of like, when you go into this, like, well, have you tried this place where you have to trust that the presenter has actually done that. And so it's sort of that questioning can actually be just as aggressive as, this isn't working for me, which is also not helpful. Like, why isn't it working? Like, so how do you give, I don't know. Maybe the question is like, what are the kinds of useful feedback that, or useful phrasing that helps move something along?
Right. Exactly. Because the point again of the critique is to help improve the work. And sometimes that means exposing the designer to things they weren't aware of for whatever reason. Sometimes it means just providing an alternative.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a good one. Like, do you believe that audience members are there to help you solve, or are they just help you there to better understand the problem?
I mean, the answer is it depends.
It depends.
It really does. Ultimately, maybe. Like, I think you worded this really well at the beginning of this conversation. Ultimately, the goal of any critique is to work as a team.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we have a presenter and an audience, like, it's really one unit trying to make whatever's on the screen the best thing it can be, right?
Right.
Towards a very solidified objective, hopefully. And it's hard to do that. I think you also alluded to this. It's hard to do that when people are first and foremost offering opinions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this. I do like this.
Oh,
this
gosh.
Part's really nice. Like, it feels good to give that feedback, and it's the easiest feedback to give, but it's not that helpful.
This is one of my former instructors at Iowa State University when I did my undergrad would not allow us to say like you couldn't say, I like this, I don't like this, because nobody cares. Like, it's completely arbitrary. It's your own opinion. But you could say, you know, why is this working? Why isn't this working?
Yeah, I like that.
Which actually like brings me to another question. Is critique a place for just like, you know, negative improvement type feedback, or is it a place for saying, for validation?
What would be an example of negative?
Well, something that's saying like, this isn't great. Like, we need to move this forward. And I mean, obviously, like, critique, when it comes from criticism, it's, you know, because we're finding areas of improvement. We wouldn't work forward if it is. I think the bigger question is like, is it a place for validation? I had somebody once who was like, we should do the hamburger method, where it's like, oh, you must say one nice thing and then one critical thing and then one nice thing to make sure everybody feels good. And like, my reaction to that is like, that's not really our job. Like, our jobs are about product development, pushing things forward. And we do that by uncovering areas of opportunity. Like, it can feel really, really shitty if it's not, you know, delivered in a, you know, a way that's, you know, has a tone of kindness to it, the radical candor piece, but also, you know, is not at the person. And it's like, hey, we're in this together. We're really trying to get this product thing to a place of excellence. But I understand that we're all humans, and whether or not we're giving, even when we're giving feedback towards the work, people take it personally. So I think that's where that comes from. But like, I'm just looking at time and math, and I'm like, okay, so for if we spend 5 minutes on some nice thing and then 5 minutes on some negative thing, like we're spending 2/3 of our time just like buffer, you know, making the person feel good.
Yeah. I don't think the sandwich method is at all what anyone should pursue in this environment. But at the same time, I do think like, it's valuable to be critical of the work, and it's totally okay to compliment it and compliment the process, especially if it's, for example, if you're talking to a designer who during the last critique kind of had some work that needed improvement, and then the next critique they showed some improvement, like you should call that out. But at the same time, it kind of is helpful to say, so bear with me, it is good to communicate when something is just not working. The thing is, you cannot start by saying like, this doesn't meet our quality bar, or I don't like this, or we don't use gradients, right? What's much more valuable is to think that thought, okay, I don't like this. And then immediately in your head go to, okay, well, what do I not like about this? Or how is this not meeting our quality bar? What specifically is it? And if you can do that, then when you speak or write your notes down, you can just explicitly cut out the first part and say, you know, in your head, I don't like this because it doesn't meet our quality bar. And then out loud you say, you know, we really anticipate that our designs are responsive, and I'm not seeing that in what you're showing, right? That's a helpful criticism.
This makes me wonder, like, what are the kinds of tools that you should bring into critique with you? And one of the things that you mentioned was quality bar, and that's really hard to actually say, like, this doesn't meet our quality bar unless you actually have a quality bar. And so if you can say, this doesn't meet our quality bar because we need, you know, micro animations to be more polished in this. And, you know, if you're going to hand this off to dev in this prototype, like, they're going to build it just like that. Or, you know, are you bringing design principles that help guide your decision making? That reminds me of the question cards that we made that were designed for critique, which goes back to that thing that you were asking, like, you know, what were the things we were asking, like, you know, hey, who are you solving for? Is this meeting that audience? Great. Does this match other standard patterns? And so like, I can see having tools of some sort or resources coming in with you to critique, whether it's, you know, posters or like cards. And I remember when we were at Facebook, John Bradford had put together those cards, which is like, critique is this, it does this, but it doesn't do this. Like, even little guidelines on your own values of how you do critique. What are the things that you're bringing in with you to help guide your practices towards, you know, greater efficiency, greater quality, greater excellence, whatever that is?
Yeah. At Lyft, in our design rooms, we have our design principles in very large format, mm-hmm. sitting right at the front of the screen, or sorry, front of the room, right next to the screen. So as someone's presenting, you can immediately just kind of glance over and be like, okay, this meets this. I see why they're mm-hmm. doing this, right? I think it's really good that you brought this up, because those tools kind of help us as both presenters and the audience, in that if we feel really strongly about something, but maybe it's just a personal bias, it's just not worth saying. And having those tools there to reflect on help us kind of stay away from that dangerous territory of just being personally opinionated.
Yeah. One thing I used to do too, which is super simple, but when we'd start critique, if I was facilitating, I'd write down the, you know, who's presenting, the amount of time that they need, just so like everybody could be watching the clock.
On a whiteboard,
where everybody could see it, and then jot down the problems that they're solving. and then the things that people were asking for. And so that way, as a facilitator, that actually gave me a tool that when somebody was going over or, you know, speaking for a long time, I could say, hey, this is great feedback. Sounds like you guys are going to need to go discuss this more. Let's move on because we only have 10 minutes left. Or, you know, I think we're getting a little bit far off from the ask of the feedback here. Again, like I really try to encourage those discussions. It's not that they shouldn't happen. It's just that when we are in a critique environment, there's a limit to how deep we can go. And so we want to use the time to continue to move forward.
Two things I really like about what you just said. One is documenting the problem being solved for mm-hmm. each of the projects being shown. And kind of the other thing, this actually maybe I'm pulling a little bit away from what you were saying, actually, okay. but is documenting when conversations need to take place offline or when they need the conversation needs to carry on. So if you're the note taker or the facilitator or whoever's taking notes, you should be fully including in those notes, like, okay, so-and-so wants to talk about this, they will follow up and like tag them in the document right. or something.
And actually, like for me, a lot of it is deciding like, or not deciding, but like getting a sense of whether or not these things need to happen or not. You know, if there's someone in your critique and you're presenting and they're just not on board with you and they're actually not a decision maker, you could go spend an hour trying to convince them of this direction or listening to their feedback or whatever that is. That might not be the best hour or use of your time. However, there might be a time where, you know, this is a decision better made with better analytics, or, you know, a PM actually needs to get ramped in on this because, you know, we might say, hey, decision B, you know, or option B is where we need to head. We need to take that design direction. And if we come back into critique next week, we might not have gone with option B because option B might take, you know, 2 months longer to build. And so a lot of the things that we need to follow up on aren't always within this group of people. They might need to be bringing in other people. And so for me, one of my jobs is saying, actually, I think you need X, Y, and Z. And this is like not just the facilitator role. This is the director role. Like, I think you actually need to go and talk to these people before you pursue this. And that will give you the information that you have to be able to continue. And I think that's actually kind of hard for some designers, is just saying like, the designers are not always the decision makers. It kind of depends on how your company is run. But if you're working in a, you know, a strong product-led environment or something to that effect, like it might just be that the designers are there to give the feedback. And then once the feedback is given, that sort of like role moves on to back to the designer and back to the product team.
That's something I was just wanting to make sure we highlight is, in any critique, well, not any critique, there are times and places where this won't necessarily be true, but the majority of the time I would say the role of the audience is to provide the feedback. It's not to make decisions.
Yep. Right?
The designer ultimately owns what goes out of that room and what gets implemented. Right?
Yep.
And so I think designers can sometimes feel misled by that or confused by that, saying, if I share my work, then suddenly I have to take all this feedback and I have to make it happen when it might not align.
You feel like you need to please people by like, yeah. listening. And sometimes you do, but it's a skill to be able to sort of evaluate the feedback before you go and pursue it and say, actually, you know, when I was in that room, like it was super compelling and I got really excited. And then I spent 2 days pursuing this direction and it didn't pan out. Before you go and do that, you know, go back to the feedback and say, would this better solve the problem? You know, does this not meet our quality bar? Do I need to go and pursue that?
And if you find that it doesn't, mm-hmm. you should probably document that or be very thorough in your rationale, because often what we can do as designers too is we can hear a lot of feedback that we maybe don't agree with or just don't like. Maybe mm-hmm. we don't like the person it's coming from.
Sure.
And then we decide not to implement it. But then, you know, later on during a product review or another critique, the person is like, hey, remember when I said this thing and you didn't do it? Like, what happened there?
Yeah.
You need to be able to say, well, you know, it didn't align with subjective.
Yeah. Probably not liking the feedback giver isn't a valid reason to not consider it.
Yeah,
but I'm sure it happens. So, I mean, again, we've been talking about this in the context of having fellow designers. I know, like, we always speak a little bit towards the earlier folks in the earlier stages of their careers. What about the folks who don't have critiques? How do you do critique when you don't have a team of people around you who are, you know, hopefully equally and more versed in the product and design world than you are?
I think there are two ways to do this, mm-hmm. or there's two lenses to view this at. One is anyone can give you critique, right? You can go to anyone in the business on your team, sit down with them for an hour and go through the exact same format you would of any design critique, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, which is missing from the first, is that design lens. The, you know, when you're critiquing with designers, they're going to be looking at things like the visual polish or craft. They're going to be looking at the interaction patterns.
Right.
They're going to be looking at the flows. If you talk to an engineer, they're probably going to be thinking very heavily on the, well, how is this going to get built context, right?
Right.
That's not to say that their feedback's not valuable, because it still can be. It can still kind of illuminate your vision of the design work. And if you're very specific in how you present it, it can be very helpful for you. But the second thing is, depending again on context, the world's pretty big. And if you're a sole designer working in a company, you might be able to find ways. Obviously, this is very touchy, but you have to be careful. But you might find ways to present to designers outside of your company. Can you bring someone in, have them sign an NDA, and just sit down with you for an hour? Like, that's the thing that happens. If the work is not super confidential, maybe you can share it in a public setting even. Right. Maybe you can dumb it down to grayscale wireframes and talk about the larger problem and get feedback on that.
Right. Or patterns, or just like the visual components. Sure.
Another thing here too that I'll quickly throw in is like kind of a third variant a little bit too, is research. Like, mm-hmm. there's no better feedback mechanism than user
putting
research.
Putting it in front of people.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I really resonate with the first one. I've interviewed a couple of folks lately who were the only designers at their company and just really are craving that environment where they can get feedback and work with other peers. And sometimes to a point where they feel really down because they're not growing. And I think there's really something like interesting where even if you're at a small startup and you're the only designer and like the CEO or, you know, some big stakeholder is giving you feedback, like you're actually getting a chance to work with them and learn about what they value. And that's like a more holistic view actually than what just your design team would value. So there's really something amazing to actually being able to get feedback from the CEO or from some like project stakeholder, because they actually probably have more context on the problem that you're solving and where the business needs to go. And there's interesting things where you go, hey, it's not just about like user problems. It's about the user problems and where the business is trying to go. And then you sort of like broaden your perspective. And that's something great to be able to bring back into critique. Yeah.
Yeah. I that is such a really valuable point. I wish I could underline that 3 times here out loud. Cause it's true. Like that feedback is sometimes even more valuable than what you get in a small design group, because the inverse of what I said earlier is when you're in that design group, they're usually only focused on the visuals or the interaction or the product strategy. They're not always thinking about the larger business use case, and things like that.
Right. And I think, you know, when you kind of step back and say like, what does critique do for you over time? You know, it helps you learn how to be a better craftsperson, a better designer, a better interaction designer, a better product thinker, all of those things. And if you were to only limit the kind of feedback, now we're kind of stepping outside of critique, but if you were only to limit the feedback that you would take and how you design from fellow designers, you'd miss out on a whole lot on being just like a great product person. And I think that's really important when you think about your own personal evolution and how you grow as a designer. So many times people are like, oh man, I need to go to a conference or I need to like take a class and learn how to do X, Y, or Z better. Usually working at a company of any kind, there's plenty of learning to be had. You just have to identify it and realize that it won't always come in the perfect package. And that's okay. And the same is true with critiques. Like critiques are going to be done 1,000 ways and that's okay. I think it's just like identifying the problem you're going to solve. And actually at Intercom, we do this. I've sat in on our Dublin critique, one of our Dublin critiques, our London critique, and my critique, and then we're all doing it differently. And I think it's actually okay because we all have a different sort of set of people that we're working with. We're all working on different products. We have different leadership. We have different personalities. So for example, in London, feedback is kind of just popcorn. There's no, you know, you don't go around the room. You don't do a round robin. And it actually works because they have a great deal of respect for each other there. Mm-hmm. They have a great deal of expertise. And so, you know, no one's sort of like elevating the conversation too much or like holding it back. And so for them, I'd be like, you know, hey, you actually might not have the same problems that, you know, I'm trying to do in San Francisco, which isn't actually like make people be quiet. It's actually sometimes to actually like give everyone a voice and be able to elevate them a little bit too. So I think it's, you know, that just goes to say like you can do critique in the ways that work for you. I think you just have to, you know, question yourselves of, are people getting the feedback that they need? Is it being done in a respectful and even way? And I don't know what else. What are the other objectives we're trying for?
I think that's, I mean, that's ultimately it. If you can walk into a room with people, and something I want to kind of add to what you just said a second ago, it can also be helpful to occasionally bring in non-designers into your design critique.
Ooh, that's a, I feel like that's kind of contentious.
It's a touchy subject and it doesn't always work. It should not be weaponized as well. Like if you're a designer working on a project and you want to convince the design team that your designs are right, so you bring in your product manager who agrees with you all the time.
Right. Don't right. Do that. Sure.
I guess sometimes it can be beneficial to have those other perspectives.
I used to, at Facebook, there were a couple times where I'd let PMs or engineers come in and I would ask them to sort of sit as a fly on the wall because it was a great empathy building exercise to understand like what sort of feedback we're giving each other. And also, you know, sometimes engineers, PMs haven't had that sort of close connection with design and might not understand how the process works. And so it's a learning opportunity for them. I'm also have one of my critiques at Intercom is a SF and Friends critique. So, you know, people from other offices can pop in if they're working, if they're partnering with one of our teams to get feedback, or if they just want to see how we do critique in a different way. And we've just started doing that. So I have to see if that's useful. But I'll need them to jump into the format and I'll have to guide them. And that might be hard just to kind of get used to it because I need them to also not detract from it. And that's what I just have to be considerate of is that, you know, is somebody coming in going to be detracting from that? And is it because it's derailing because you're using your partner as a weapon? I also think like we want critique to stay. We always kind of call it a safe space mm-hmm. for designers to give feedback. And I think there's something to that. I bring researchers and content strategists, content designers into the room too, because I think there's like that's part of the larger design discipline. Yeah.
So, at the end of the day, if as long as you have clearly defined roles, and the objective of whatever is being shown is very clear to everyone in the room, everyone agrees and is aligned on it. Mm-hmm. Really, the whole purpose of critique is to get additional perspectives on the work.
Yeah.
Helping you move it forward.
Helping you move it forward, helping you get unblocked.
And there's a lot of ways you can do that.
Yeah. And I would add, like, you know, there are times where you don't need to be unblocked, but when you think of it as not just a single session critique, but critique is this ongoing practice that is this thing that sort of like grows with you. There are critiques where you're not, you know, going in needing to get unblocked or different perspective, but you're just needing to lay continual context. And that's something we actually haven't talked about is that the more frequently you present in critique, the easier it ends up being to actually get the feedback that you need, because you don't have to, you know, your listeners or your audience who are just like asking all these clarifying questions to get caught up. So I think there's something to realizing that sometimes you'll really go in there and have a problem that you like just can't figure out, or like something you're really like debating between. And then that might feel really useful. And back to when we were like, you know, hey, what felt like a really good critique? It's like, yeah, when we unblock somebody and they felt enthusiastic about that. That won't happen every time because there's something to just the consistency of showing work that actually like helps, you know, build team support in what you're doing. And I think that also builds relationships and helps people understand where you're coming from better, which makes sometimes those tougher moments of like where there's disagreements or debate, that's when that becomes like a really sort of useful thing, because everyone has all the context that they need to move forward.
Yeah, that's well said. So if you want to become a better designer, level up your work, find a way to have a very constructive critique.
Yeah. And I think like, when I think about folks who are already doing critique and they're like, man, mine isn't working, or I, you know, walk away feeling all beaten up, like what are the things that come to your mind that are like you could do?
It's a good question. I don't know. What would you say?
I mean, I would say like, just go back and think through like, hey, what are the things that aren't working? Like, what are the problems that we're solving here? And then decide whether it's, you know, hey, we actually need some facilitation, or we need some sort of, you know, structure in terms of who speaks when, or do we need some principles or something like that? Like, what are the things that we need? And I would suggest like maybe just modifying them one at a time.
Yeah. And of course, as always with most everything we do, experiment.
Yeah.
Try some things, see what works. And if it doesn't work for you, then that's okay.
Totally.
Cool. See you at the next critique.
Okay. Bye.